You know those videos of shipwrecks at the bottom of the Great Lakes? These massive ships lying 500, even 600 feet deep? There's really nothing down there besides the wreckage and the mussels blanketing it. Barren, sandy lake bed, hardly any sunlight, very few fish. But it wasn't always like that. Hundreds of thousands of fish used to live that deep in the Great Lakes' coldest, darkest waters. In Lake Michigan, Huron, and Ontario, those fish are mostly gone, and desert-like, wide-open spaces are what's left. In a lot of ways, the lower Great Lakes have emptied out over the last 70 years. And man, how that happened is complicated. There was pollution and overfishing.
Steel mills and oil refineries are among the worst polluters of Lake Michigan.
Commercial fishing got so competitive that it began cleaning out the commercial fish populations.
Not only are the catches smaller, but they're usually made up of fish that can be used only for animal feed or industrial products.
There were invasive species.
The sea lamprey is like something out of a horror film, feasting on the fish of the Great Lakes.
Invader number two, the alewife,
is a tiny invasive mollusk called the quagga mussel.
And by the early 2000s, native fish populations in the Great Lakes were kind of wrecked, especially the little ones who made up the bulk of prey for top predators. By 2010, the alarm bells were ringing. But this one scientist in Michigan gets an idea.
Like, there were people that I would bring this up to early on that would think there definitely were some raised eyebrows with the thought of doing this.
That's Matt Herbert. And his idea is to find this tiny fish, one that lives hundreds of feet deep in Lake Superior, and see if it might be possible to reintroduce it to Lake Michigan and Lake Huron. He scrapes together some money and a team of people, and with a lot of research and a little luck, they're starting to think it might just work.
It looked like this mass of beautiful silver. As the net was coming in, it's almost like sparkly chainmail coming up in the water.
This is Points North, a podcast about the land, water, and inhabitants of the Great Lakes. I'm Dan Wanchura. Reporter Ellie Katz picks it up right after this.
Points North is brought to you in part by Cherry Republic, celebrating Northern Michigan's tart cherries with products like jams, barbecue sauces, chocolate-covered cherries, and more. Online at cherryrepublic.com. And Aspire North Realtors, bringing real estate professionals together, supporting their involvement in the community, and advocating for the industry in a sustainable way. Online at aspirenorthrealtors.com.
Matt Herbert didn't grow up swimming in the Great Lakes or watching them change.
I'm actually from Iowa, way down in southwest Iowa, in the middle of nowhere.
Matt is a senior conservation scientist now at the Michigan chapter of the Nature Conservancy. He spends a lot of his time figuring out how to restore native fish populations. One of those native fish is a species called kayai. Kayai was the fish Matt had been thinking about.
He was talking about this with me before I was listening and when no one else was listening either.
This is Jason Smith. He's a fisheries biologist at Bay Mills Indian Community in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Kayai look kind of like mini whitefish. They're part of the same family.
So beautiful little silvery fishes, probably seldom much longer than 6 inches long. They tend to have really big eyes because they live really deep. So if they're going to use any light at all, they got to have an enormous eye to catch whatever little tiny bits of light are there.
Kai was one of those fish that used to be abundant in most of the Great Lakes. They likely moved in big schools, twitching to the right and left, all in unison. They were the perfect meal for top predators, like lake trout. But like a lot of native fish, Kai got hit too. And for the last 50 years, they've really only been found in Lake Superior, and a lot of people forgot about them. But not Matt. He wanted to see if kayai could be reintroduced to Lake Michigan and Lake Huron. There were a couple reasons why. One, invasive mussels had sucked almost all the nutrients out of the water and down to the bottom of the lake.
There's just not very many nutrients in the water column, but there's tons of nutrients locked up on the bottom of the lake because that's where the quagga mussels are.
Matt thought maybe this deep water fish could unlock some of those nutrients. He also thought they would help feed bigger fish. But all of this was really just an idea. Then, in 2012, the Great Lakes Fishery Commission created a task group. They wanted to know about feeding those bigger fish. They wanted to know whether it might be possible to restore any of those smaller native fish to Lake Michigan. Matt and a bunch of other scientists basically went through a list of potential fish. Kaiai was one of them.
Kaiai was seen as, like, yeah, that would be a good species to reestablish. However, there really isn't very much known about Kaiai. We didn't know exactly when they spawn, and we certainly didn't know whether they could be collected when they spawned.
Where and when a fish spawns is pretty crucial information, especially when you're trying to collect their eggs and raise them in a hatchery. So the task group submitted its research on a bunch of other species and Kaiai.
That task group basically said it wasn't even feasible. So basically was telling the Lake Committee that we don't even have this option. It's not even on the table.
For most of the scientists, that was that. But Matt saw an opening. He wanted Kaiai to be on the table. He wanted to prove they could be reestablished. So he scraped some money together and...
I started making phone calls to try to identify a commercial fisher that we could work with to try and go out that time of year to collect Kaiai.
He said, I want these fish from deep. I said, we can do that. I didn't know if we could do it, and I didn't know what would happen.
That's fisheries biologist Jason Smith again. Matt found a tribal commercial fisher willing to look for the fish. Then they got to the business of figuring out if any of this was possible.
Can we catch these fish in good spawning condition? Can we get them from 700 feet on the bottom of Lake Superior in January? If you haven't been on a gillnet tug 17 miles out in Lake Superior in January, you know that. So there's feasibility problem one right there.
Feasibility problem one was solved. They went out in the dead of winter and caught Kaiai. But feasibility problem two started as soon as the fishing crew began reeling them up.
Now we catch a fish 700 feet deep that has eggs and has an air bladder. The air bladder expands as the fish comes up in the water column, as the net comes up towards the boat. Pressure is less and less, so the air bladder expands and expands. Eggs end up being expelled into the water column. Those are the eggs that we wanted as hatchery stock.
And even when they did reel up females with eggs and males with milt at the peak of spawn,
they're literally typically down to a drop or two of milt, which is enough. There's a million sperm or more in a drop, but it still is like, you know, aim well at the cup that you're mixing in because you have one drop. Only one drop. Do not miss.
Feasibility problem two, also mostly solved with good aim, which brought them to problem number three. Can deep water fish survive in shallow water?
And our hatchery tanks are, they're 3 feet deep. Are they gonna live well?
So far, it seems like they do, which means it's onto a whole new phase of research designed to answer a whole new set of questions.
Can you raise them up? Can they go from tanks back to the wild? Can the young fish make that kind of an adjustment?
Researchers at tribal fisheries and federal agencies are moving on to figure out all these other things. Like, what temperature water do these fish like? What do they eat? What's the best way to rear them? But they're doing all this without any sort of promise at the end.
What this work is doing is basically just giving the lake committees the option to restore Kaiai. What this work is moving toward is trying to put it on the table.
And there's something more it would do, too.
We, humans, have done lots of damage to our fish kin. And so for me, the idea that there might be an opportunity to fix some of that damage is really important. But we have to understand that even a perfectly thought out plan that is implemented almost perfectly has a fairly reasonable likelihood of failure. So we're going to do really good science with Kaiai, but whether it will actually work, that's kind of out of my control, thankfully. That's up to the lake and the fish.
Jason says these restoration projects can sometimes take up to 50 or 100 years. So some of us might not live to see what the lakes and the fish decide.
That episode was written and produced by Ellie Katz. It was edited by Morgan Springer. Additional editing from Peter Payette, Michael Livingston, and me, Dan Wanchura. Music by Blue Dot Sessions. Sound from Freesound. Hey, if you like Points North, rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram. We're at Points North Podcast. Points North is a production of Interlochen Public Radio.